house today, which is awesome. I love that. But thank you to those that are here and attending virtually. We're officially starting right now. Everybody should have a board packet from the back if you don't have one yet. If there's any board members, voting board members that are not around the table, we've got at least two more spots right here to come up if you need. But we have a great, great group here in person, and we've made the sound better. But I am going to ask for those that are talking, let's still speak up as much as possible. We did have some technical issues at our last meeting in January, but we do have an extra owl and some extra mics happening. So thanks to everybody that's here. And I need a thumbs up from a few people if they can hear online really well. Everything's better. Okay. Oh, I hear that the thumbs up emoji float up. Or word up. Oh, and Aaron, they're floating up. Very cool. All right, great. Thanks, everybody. Okay, we have a pretty packed agenda today. And then for those of you that saw my email that went out yesterday, we are going to try and break away just a little bit early, so that we can check out and utilize our new VR training, which I'm so excited to learn about a little bit more. I'm just going to look to Nicole to make sure that's what I was looking for back there. So thanks, everybody in the back. That's all our virtual people, so those that are wondering. This conversation was very, 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 very cool. Okay. So we have a lot of new faces around the room, like a lot. We had new board member orientation this morning from 10 to 11 before our executive committee meeting, and we had 6 new board members with us this morning for new board member orientation, and we were missing 2. So we've had a lot of new faces. So we're going to give them a minute to introduce themselves. I told them to do this 3 times. This is their first time, so they're going to have it down, packed. But there's a lot more people at this meeting, and I warned them the room would get full. So with that, I'm going to let them introduce themselves. I actually am going to introduce. So Selena Sinclair, she was here for new board member orientation and executive committee. She is online, but I'm not. She's driving to her board meeting, so I'm not going to make her hop off the phone while she's driving and listening to us. But she's with the Utah Tourism Bureau, and we're so excited to have her on the board. She is official, and this is her first meeting, so we're excited to have her. And then I also believe that there was one other with us that had to not be there. Laurel, yeah, she is with Savage Logistics. She will tell you that they are the company that you've never heard of, but they're all over Utah. They're actually an international giant logistics company here in the state, so we're excited to have her because she's their chief talent and rewards and rewards person at their company. But she has to step out. And then I'm going to turn the time over. Richard, can we have you go first and introduce yourself?
Gotcha. Rich Fulmer, AGC of Utah, Associated General Contractors, Director of Apprenticeship. And
thank you so much for joining. Tyler, go ahead.
Tyler Lowe with Cache Valley Bank. I work in our Ogden office, but I'm the president over our Wasatch region.
Thank you. And for those of you that remember Brewster being who served for Evercore, he found a service. So glad to have Tyler with us. So great.
Yeah, I'm Wendy Harris. I'm with Brown Aviation Space and Defense. We are a solenoid and valve and actuation device company located in St. George, Utah.
He's been here for a couple of times. He did have new member rotation, but he's, I'm going to call him well on his way to being a veteran, so we'll let him pass.
Yeah, Booster Egg was with Big D Construction. I'm a solid office. We do some questions.
You may have seen their signs, around. Possibly. So great. Did I miss anybody? I think I had everybody. Michelle Hill, also, we've introduced her before with Clyde Company. She was not able to be here today, but her she sent a replacement. That is so good. That's so great. So she brought somebody to fill her in when they get back. So Garrett, would you just introduce yourself really quick?
Yeah, so Garrett Updike with Clyde Companies, work really closely with Big Trail Hill, who's our CHRO.
And Vic could have come to orientation today, but he's online. So I'm just going to, Vic, did you introduce yourself last time?
I don't know if I did, but I am more than happy to introduce myself again. Vic Hockett, Associate Commissioner for the Utah System of Higher Education, and get to oversee the Talent Ready Utah program for the state.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Talent Ready, people have all heard that too. That's not a new term either, so that's great. So those are all of our new board members. So a lot. We really pushed the governor's office these last few months to get everybody approved. So that's exciting. Several people that are excused. It's a little bit spring break flux time, so I'm so grateful to all of you that are here. I'm just assuming it's not your spring break. That's why you're here. So thanks for being here. And then just by way of information, we had just a change with Career Pathways Group. Jennifer Saunders isn't at Salt Lake Community College anymore, so we are transitioning a little bit on the Career Pathway Group. And also I'll make another announcement. Stephen is actually taking over as chair for the Committee Serving Individuals with Disabilities. So he will be our new chair for that group as well. Okay. Did I miss anything in my notes? I think I got everything. All right. Awesome. In your board packet, we have our January minutes. I need a motion to approve those minutes. Deanna, the first thing is second by Sean. Any discussion over those? Any changes? Any thoughts? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It's moved. Really quick, I just wanted to highlight a few things. Liz and I had the opportunity last month, it was like a long time ago, but it was just last month, to attend the winter meeting for the National Governors Association. I supported on the fall meeting that I've gone to. I have not had the opportunity to go to the winter meeting before, and normally because it's during session. And so it's hard for us to get back to D.C. for that meeting. And this year it was pushed out for March, so Liz and I were able to attend. It was very well attended. The fall meetings are fairly well attended. The last one that Nicole and I went to in North Dakota was pretty solid. But the winter meeting, there was a lot of people there. I didn't count, but well over probably two-thirds or more of the states or territories were represented with either a department liaison and or a board member. And we're able to meet in those meetings and discuss. Always enlightening. We have breakouts just for way of information. Liz or Nicole's counterparts from the states will go when they meet together and talk about policy and things going on pertaining to the WEOA law. And then the second day is all of us together with chairs and liaisons together discussing things. And then the final day is typically just chairs, but there were a lot of liaisons. I told Liz, I'm like, you should be here. There's a lot of people in this room that aren't chairs. But we just talk about things going on in our states, things that are going on as far as policy. Transparently, it was March, the second week of March. And as we've known since January, things have been quite fluid back in Washington, D.C., so there was a lot of discussion around that and just rolling with things to come and trying to understand what was going on. A lot of discussion just around policy, still a lot of discussion around apprenticeships. What else am I? Good, solid economic update. And I have slides on that if anybody would like those. It was very good. We went over how to continue with some programs and funding now that the pandemic funds have kind of run out. We've talked about that a little bit.
In response to layoffs.
I think that kind of lingered around about 12 months ago. I'm just really kind of fortunate that we're starting to see that a little bit. Lots of discussion around AI. A lot of things about AI and how to empower those. In fact, they are doing a couple of different small working groups from that, and AI is one of them, and I'm hoping to join that one that just kind of came apprised of what's going on there. And then they often do a breakout on just strengthening military families into the civilian pathway for them. So just if anybody wants to talk about it or understand what's going on, it's just a good learning tool and let me just share kind of benchmark or things going on. At one point, on the last day, we go around and each chair just shares things that their board is focusing on or things that the department has done within the last 12 months and share with other states so that we can just learn about what's going on in other states. So anyway, great experience. I'm happy to talk more about that if anybody has any questions. With that, we're going to move on to the next next agenda item. We just recertified the Ogden One Stop 2 weeks ago. We had Sean Newell was there.
Sean Newell was there.
Sean Newell was like, if I was. Sean Newell was there. Kendall Thomas was there. He's online with us today. And then also Stephen Olson was there, if I recall. So I'm going to let Stephen, you want to just maybe share, as you guys know, everybody knows, I asked new board members to go to a one-stop certification. It's really how you learn really what's going on, what the WIOA law is all about. So Stephen took that to heart and did it. So I wanted to share anything that you learned or just a couple highlights.
You bet. I think the most important time that I spent was really time shadowing the staff in doing their jobs, in meeting people, doing basically the triage and deciding what they needed. And then also sitting and seeing what, also helping people with various projects that needed to be completed by these departments. And so just a tremendous opportunity to see the commitment of the staff, their dedication, their desire to serve people, and to ensure that whether they were, you know, looking for a job or the benefits they needed to have, being able to see that process work well. So tremendous experience. And then during the certification, it's wonderful to sit, you know, with that staff in that room for a few hours and just learn more about what their goals were, how they accomplished them, and what their desires were moving forward, which was, again, very enlightening. So good experience.
Awesome. So good. Before Sean Milne goes, Kendall, is there anything you want to share? I know you're online.
It was also your first time. After all these years, I'm ashamed. I still have a full head of hair when I joined.
Anything you'd like to share?
Yes.
Anything you'd like to talk about as far as the recertification?
I think get over what Steven said. I would just add my two cents of it was a good experience. I'm grateful that I did so. I sincerely, aside from the shame that I just mentioned a moment ago, I sincerely wish I would have done. When I had closer opportunities in the window to when I was in both places, and you know, it was as noted, just really good to see up close and personal what the service is being provided and how great employees handle those that are seeking services. I think kind of what you alluded to, and I'll only allude to it as well. Right now, there's a lot of uncertainty that folks feel in the last couple of months, and the humanity seems to be missing from some of those interactions. And so when folks feel like they, you know, worry about how they can provide for themselves and their loved ones, it was nice to see the employees be so good to these folks that walked in. And there were a number of situations that Stephen referenced that we got to see staff members interact with folks that needed services. It was very helpful to be up close and to shadow, to have those conversations in the boardroom upstairs. So just really good job to the team. And kudos to Kim, Stephanie, and everybody else in the room, and everyone. Thank you for setting that up and giving us that opportunity. So,
anything else, Gary?
Well, before I do that, can I just get a quick show of hands? Who has, from staff perspective or board members, participated in one of our certification or recertifications? Good. Yeah, appreciate that. And I think when we talked about our committee meeting on Tuesday, and Sean and Steve both got to talk about it, and you and Megan, your comments, you really do see what goes on and how the interaction occurs. And we've been doing these now 8 years. 8 years we've been doing these as well. So thanks to everybody.
So Kendall, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to say it was really good to go on that certification. This is the second one I've done, and it was, I'll echo just what Commissioner Milne or Sean Milne said. It was good, it was insightful, and doing good things. So that's just my comment.
Thank you so much. I will entertain a motion to recertify the Ogden Employment
Chart. Madam Chair, I would make that motion. I would second it.
Thank you. I have a first from Sean Milne and a second from Stephen Olson. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Congratulations to Ogden. Helen, is your area cap?
This is Rhonda. She's the Employment Center Manager.
Wonderful. Congratulations. I know a lot of work goes into that. So, Jenny's like to mention a couple things in our opening talk as we go back. Just a couple of things of note. We are working on ideas for our third project that we do in the fall. We gave the executive committee some options. We're going to explore here before. We have a lot of good ideas. We can actually spend the time in the next year with a couple of them. So we'll keep you posted and we'll talk about that in July. But just remember that October is when we do our core service project. And then lastly, just make a note, it's still 6 months out, but of course, as per usual, our October meeting falls right in the middle of the One Utah Summit. Because of the timing of it, it's possible that we might coincide the One Utah Summit with our board meeting because many people will be at the One Utah Summit. So it's possible that meeting might be in Cedar City. So just keep that in mind, but we don't know officially. And there will still be a virtual option, of course, and we'll probably still have our satellite location here. So just if you're looking at potentially going to the One Utah Summit this year, it's the 6th, 7th, and 8th, if you're already going to be there, then maybe just know that you're going to stay a little bit longer that last afternoon, and then we'll do our board meeting. Okay? Did I have anything? I didn't know. Okay, we're just going to make a little switch to the agenda. We are going to actually move the veterans program up to now. I'm sorry I didn't tell you that. So I'm actually going to turn the time over to Gary Carter for a minute.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and welcome everybody. I think Gary Carter on the board, but I run the Department of Veterans and Military Affairs in the state of Utah. And we talked about doing this before. We have new players, one returning player, in this space as well. We thought it would be good to do a veterans, military services, employment, et al. Update. So the two primary, and Kelly, you're going to join them? Yeah, there we go. The three that are going to do it, Dave Busk, former area director, now runs the veterans services for the Department of Workforce Services through the years. Our returning member is Mike Miller. Many of you remember him when he ran Workforce Services here, and I think worked for Greg at that time. Mike now is part of our department and runs our family programs we have for veterans and military families within the state. I think many of you know he's retired. A member of the Utah National Guard, the Army side of the Guard grew up overall. And Cal Smith, and Cal's also a former member of the Guard, and he now runs our Governor's Challenge, our suicide prevention. And I'll say this, and Cal knows it, I wish we didn't need him. But, you know, we try to address all those issues which cause people to think about things in different ways than they might currently as well. So Kale's on board with our department recently. I was back both of them within the last, Mike, you were last September, October, somewhere, and Kale, you just came on about January or?
November.
God, it just seems like just a short period of time with you. But anyway, so we thought it would be good for the board. Here, a great update from these three key individuals who help out our veterans, our military, and their families throughout Utah. And Dave, you're going first?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Thank
you. We're going to move.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate being here. Again, my name is David Bus. Thank you, Mr. Harder, for the introduction. So oversee the veteran services within the department. It's great to see new faces on the board. And we just want to give you an overview, a high-level overview of some of the services that we provide to veterans in the department. Utah's home to about 127,000 veterans. And we just want to make sure that everybody is aware of the services that we provide and resources that are available to them. We can connect, or we serve active military members, veterans, and their spouses and family members. And we provide employment services, training opportunities, and we connect them to other resources as well. And last, about every year, we serve about 6,000. We help about 6,000 veterans connect to employment. And in our accelerated credentialing to employment program, we help typically around 200 people attain certifications or licenses here in Utah. So next slide. I want to, hopefully you can see this. This is on our website, jobs.utah.gov/veterans, is the one-stop shop for all of our services. So job seekers can go here, an employer, you know, spouses, military members, and there's a lot of information here. I want to draw your attention to this little tiny box at the top there that says find a veteran specialist. That will give you a list of all of the subject matter experts in Utah. It gives you their name, location, phone number, email address. And that's somebody that you can reach out to. Anybody can reach out to make that first step, right? And these folks, these are our connection team members that are familiar with our veteran services and help them, that help understand what their needs are and get them connected to the right resources. I do want to say that what we also provide priority service for them, so helping them connect to the many of the programs we have within the department. So once a veteran has been screened by one of our connection team members and found eligible for what we call intensive employment services, we get them connected to a local DVOP. That's a disabled veteran outreach program representative. We call them employment counselors. And that employment counselor will sit down with them and do that thorough assessment and help them create an employment plan. Let's go to the next slide. There's a whole lot of the services and assistance that we provide. you know, veteran military members can face some unique challenges when it comes to transitioning from military to civilian employment. And we help them translate those valuable and unique skills they learned in the military into something that the civilian sector understands, right? And so we do that. Also, spouses, when they're, you know, moving from state to state with the veteran, oftentimes they may have licenses or certifications that are required in their occupation or their field, but they don't transfer from state to state. And so our accelerated credentialing to employment team can help get them those licenses and certifications that they need so the spouse's career can be portable while they're stationed here in Utah. Next slide. We also have, so they're called local veteran employment representatives. They work mostly with employers. They're kind of like our workforce development specialists. The key is that they're doing outreach to employers and they're promoting hiring veterans, right? The value that a veteran can bring to the workforce and the more they can contribute. They're also promoting a lot of our programs. We have the Higher Best Medallion Award. It's a DOL level award that recognizes businesses that go above and beyond in hiring veterans. We have our Utah Patriot Partnership Program. About 3 years ago, we did a 2.0 version of that. Many of you were involved in that. And then, you know, we also promote the DOL SkillBridge program. So, next slide. So, and they actually do, these leavers will actually go out and do job development. So, if you think about the DevOps getting them ready, the leavers will help connect them, you know, to the workforce and identify employers who are trying to help make that match. We've got some great partnerships throughout the state. One of those is with the VA. Their VRME program will refer job-ready veterans over to us once they've completed their education and training with the VA, and we'll help get them employed that way. We've got, of course, our folk rehab folks here in-house. We've got a partnership with the justice folks, so we can help a little justice involve veterans overcome those barriers and obtain employment. And we have a really, really strong partnership with VMA. And I'm honored that Mike's back and talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on in the VA. But we really appreciate VMA's support, and they have a lot to do with our ACE program.
Whoa, you're using acronyms, and I got a lot of new board members.
Sorry.
Throw out VMA and so I got
to
spell it out.
The Utah Department of Veterans Military Affairs, right, the partners group. We have the VA, the Veterans Administration, who, through the VA's benefits program, they do the Chapter 31 training, right? So Chapter 31, Part 38 law. And so that education benefit, that veteran, we use that. And then at the end of that education, that's when we come in and we help with the employment. And the Accelerated Credentialing to Employment, that's the ACE acronym that you talked about. It's just easier to say ACE.
I agree. So,
okay, but with that, I'll turn it over to Mike and talk a little bit about the Utah Department of Veteran and Military Affairs. So.
I'll be careful with the acronyms. I'm not going last because of time. I'll just be here if there's any questions. No, thanks for this opportunity. So, as Gary talked about, recently we started a military family programs. It's also applicable to veterans as well. But the Department of Defense has put a major emphasis behind the military families. They know without a strength, the service members not going to be able to deliver their mission set, and the protection of our nation without the strength of their families. So we are one of four states in the nation that have a dedicated family program manager. I'm also here with Cal. He and I get to do this together and try to make a difference throughout the state, which we're very humble and grateful to do. Utah, like David alluded to earlier, Utah's home to roughly 16,000 military members. both active and reserve component, about 127,000 veterans. And our fate is a little unique in this because most would know this, we have about 16,000 Department of Defense employees. Furthermore, we have about 200,000 plus family members, and 17,000 of them are military children. The Utah veteran community has roughly a $20 billion economic impact for state Utah. So when you consider these factors, it is an investment worth supporting. To that end, we have on the far left of the slide, you can see with both of our programs, we've created four pillars of success. Each of them have their own lines of effort or concepts to get after the overall objective of those four pillars. We're initiative-based, and it's all to collaborate. I think that's what we do very well with State of Utah, is we do it together, united, and we all have the same end state in mind, and that's to help our customers. And I'm very grateful for that, especially as they talk about partnerships. It's no different even when we go out into the government, the nonprofit, and the veteran military community. As we collaborate with them, the first thing that we have done, we've established what we call the Military Connected Family Coalition meeting. We meet once a month with all those partners. We do it virtually, and we meet to try to find concepts and strategies to deliver and increase services. Through that effort, we've created a number of different working groups. One of them being, we all know the importance of education and the transition, in addition to the employment. So we created a working group primarily with our DWS partners and other key leaders. We're looking at all aspects of spouse employment, which across on the national scale is about 21% unemployment for our military spouses. We're hopefully going to make some headway into strategies and create concepts that will be beneficial to our spouses in the state of Utah. Utilizing and highlighting programs like the Utah Patriot Partnership Program, the Department of Defense Military Spouse Employment Program, and then we also have brought on to the working group Grapevine Utah, which is a talent-ready Utah type organization here to help military spouses. Our department, through the coalition again, is also working on a comprehensive resource guide. If one of the most frustrating things amongst our community is when you go to Google, you go to the internet, and you're looking for something, there is so much information available. But when a family or a veteran or military member needs something, they get frustrated and confused. So we're trying, through this coalition and through the collaborative effort, we'll create a comprehensive resource guide that is a one-stop shop that we can help our customers get to the needs that they're looking for. Utah recently passed legislation that gives spouses and Department of Defense employees higher preference, just like they do for military veterans. We also were able to get this year spouse state retirement portability. So through the PCS cycle, if we have higher and active duty military spouse, and typically they're on a 2 to 3 year permanent change of station, so they may transfer to Hill Air Force Base, be here for 2 to 3 years, and then the military will ship them to another base around the globe. They have affordability now. If they serve 2 years as a state of Utah employee, they can take the retirement with them. They meet that vetting process at the 2 year mark rather than the typical 4 year mark. And that PCS order, that permanent change of station order, is a documentation for them to take that with. In addition to that, the legislation, now our military veteran spouses and DOD employees all have state and in-state tuition rates at all our education institutions. When you consider the housing opportunities within our state, our department delivers a grant, a first-time homebuyer grant, where it's a $2,500 grant that can be used on anything they deem necessary. So We typically do about 225 grants a year. We open that first of the state fiscal year, and we just closed it. We exhausted all the funds, but that's great for helping, especially our first-time home buyers, and attracting talent that may have left the military external to Utah and try to bring them into our state, primarily up in the northern part of Utah. Another opportunity for supporting child care. Child care for our military can be a lot different than what it typically is for a Utah family. So we're forming another working group with all of our key partners throughout the state to try to get after child care. Especially when we think about the military, it could be the costs, it could be the availability on weekends, it could be the shift work of their military member, deployments, all those different factors. We're going to try to take into consideration and try to help our military with child care. Next slide. Medical availability and affordability. One of the challenges and opportunities that we have in Utah, Hill Air Force Base is determined as exceptional family military program, EFMPs. It's an Air Force hub. It's an all-inclusive approach to maintain the highest quality of life for the special needs of our military children. Hill Air Force Base is a hub, primarily because of the tremendous service and opportunity they give with Intermountain Health Primary Children's Hospital. However, because of all the dynamics within the military healthcare system, there are some gaps, and we're forming another working group to try to get that. So if a military family is moving to Hill Air Force Base, they can get on certain provider lists before they get here and get into the system, trying to help them better enable them to take care of their family through that transition process. Of the four focus areas, one of our foundational programs is our Purple Star Schools. We think it has a tie to every one of our focus areas. It's a designation given to schools that have a strong commitment to supporting the unique needs of our military-connected students and families. It's a national program. It's sponsored by the Military Interstate Compact Commission. However, we think it's applicable to all of our youth throughout the state. It provides resources, training, and support of our students. We are launching a new website on our department website where we hope to attract every school district, every school across the state. Right now we have about 1,100 K through 12 schools in the state of Utah. 76 of them are already designated as Purple Star School. We hope through this new initiative that we can get every school. Another gem within Utah that's nothing like it across the nation is our military support teams. We have four of those MSC teams, which include a licensed clinical social worker and an advocate, whether it be a veteran or military advocate, inside of four school districts, Davis, Tooele, Ogden, and Weaver. Those teams, along with our Department of Defense school liaison officers, we can link immediately key resources and support to our students within every one of those schools of their district. A great brainchild of our director and Brian Garrett to get that started. Many other states throughout the nation are trying to duplicate that just because of the immediate support that can be delivered to one of our most important assets, which is our military children. April is a month of military child. Recently, Governor Cox made an announcement in support of April and our military children. On April 15th, it's Purple Up Day. We hope you join us in wearing purple that day, which symbolizes unity and appreciation of all the branches of the military, and more importantly, our military child and the sacrifices they give so their service member can help protect our state and our nation. Any other questions?
I actually, can you, just because of...
I don't know the acronym.
This because of the audience that we have, can you just go over the Utah Patriot Partnership Program really quick? Because I think that's specifically relevant to our industry board members.
Can you talk about that? Yeah, so the Utah Patriot Partnership Program is simply where an employer can make a pledge or a commitment to hire veterans, right? All things being equal, all qualifications being equal, they pledge to hire veterans. And we recognize them here within the department. We'll give them a letter. We actually give them a unique icon next to their business when they post jobs that identifies them as a, a veteran of the employer. They also get a recognition letter from the governor to go out to them, and they get a nice sticker sign up on their window or whatever they want. Yeah, but that's simply all it is. It's just a lesser network of employers that have pledged to hire veterans.
So if you Google Utah Patriot Partner Program, you can get to it and sign up.
And again, you can go to jobs.utah.gov/veterans, and there's a link there on, with more information on the Utah Patriot Partnership Program.
And I think it's of interest, too, for our employers. If you get that designation, then you can have the veteran, military, and spouse community looking for that in support of. So that's another thing. That's the benefit.
Go for it.
Thanks, Dr. Chair.
Yes.
So thank you for the opportunity. I told her I'd take 1 minute, and so this will be fast, and I have the tendency to talk fast anyway. So I can't see the screen in the back, so it wouldn't do me any good to have a PowerPoint anyway. So I just wanted, why would a suicide prevention person be here? Well, a little bit about me. I'm not a clinician. I'm just a veteran that's dealt with too much suicide amongst the veterans. And in this role, been in this role for about 5 months now, and I would love to work myself or put myself out of a job by not having any veteran suicide. And I wanted to say thanks to each of you for hiring veterans. As I've been in this position, I've learned how much transition, which was talked by Dave, and we're grateful for our partnership with Department of Workforce Services as well, because transition and financial insecurity is one of the key factors of veteran suicide. And so thank you to each of you that hired veterans and our service members, veterans and their families, and employ them in your companies and in your communities. For those of you that hire veterans and have veterans on your team, you'll probably see that they gravitate to one another. They tend to seek each other out and find each other, and oh, you're a veteran, yeah, me too. And you may not get them back to work because they'll talk war stories forever after that. But it's great to have veterans on your team, and I would advocate for hiring for anything. But one thing you'll find with the veteran community, for those of you that employ them, is their peer-to-peer support. They're the ones that will help each other out when they're in need or in crisis. And so that's why I wanted to take a minute just to be here today. If you have needs in your companies, communities, whatever, for your veterans, your service member, veteran, family, community, for some suicide prevention training, reach out to me. And we'll get that scheduled. We can facilitate that and help out with those things. Mike mentioned on Purple Star Schools. So how does Purple Star Schools are having military students identified in the schools throughout the state help with suicide prevention? Well, they're the first responders for suicide prevention. They're the ones at homes. They're the first to identify when that veteran or that service member has a need or a suicidal ideation. And so that's how the Purple Star School Initiative really drives into suicide prevention, and prevention means across the state. I sat in a class last week with the VA about financial instability and suicide, and I was astounded by it. I never really put that two to two together, but financial insecurity, you know, it causes an increase in divorce, family problems, stability, and also an increase in substance abuse, which is a factor or a leading cause to suicidal ideation. So again, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to work with these pillars, the health and wellness and the financial stability. But again, if there's anything we can do, if your veterans or service members that you employ have needs for suicidal ideations, let us know. Let us know how we can help and how we can support that. So thanks,
Madam
Chair.
Thank you.
Let me do it real quick. Let me wrap up as well. Thanks to the three of you for the great work that you're doing. You can reach to know any, they're trying to get veterans.utah.gov or military.utah.gov. It all comes to our website. And there you can get all the phone numbers, all the contact for Mike, for Kale, like Dave, or even we even have you on ours. But you get the employment services on ours as well. For the employers, and most of you are on this side, and I know you're some of you are on that side as well. For any need, when you run into a veteran, somebody currently serving, or a family member, if they have any need for anything, I don't care what it is, refer them to us. We can see there's lots of programs out there. Some begin with a V, some begin with an M. Some begin with the other 24 letters of the alphabet, too. But we can help them navigate where to connect overall. We're a small department, only 40 of us. If we ran our homes, we have a senior person in each of them, we'd be over 800. But we run our homes by way of contract as well. But anything that you need to make employers, hiring the employees, the veterans, or the currently serving, we try to bust down the barriers to do that. And then certainly for all the public sector, for everything that y'all see every day out here in these employment centers, at what, and Steve used the word, and I often use it, the triage, the connection team as well. Anything that you see and what you do, connect on over. The other thing, everybody, we all use the 127,000, right? People heard that number. Military, but in the state of Utah, that's the federal number for the state of Utah. That's what they say. Although in the state of Utah, we know there's about 150 to 160,000 that wore the uniform because the federal definition only it does it if you meet the federal definition, which means you had to spend at least 180 days on active duty at some point in your career. If you're a reserve component person, reserves or National Guard, never got activated. Even though you swore your oath, same oath I took as active duty, you don't count in the federal, I think that's a travesty. So we expanded our definition 10 years ago to say 180 days, whether on active duty, in the Guard, or in the reserves, and then you served honorably as well. So the number that you will see, if you say how many ever served in the military that are in Utah, we say it's between 150, 160,000. Federal government says 127. We use that number because that allows us to compare our stuff to other states as well. So 150, 160,000, like fellow the folks in arms who raised their hand and said, I will serve selflessly for all of us as well. But thanks to the three of y'all. Madam Chair, thanks to you. Thanks to everybody here as well. Thank you.
Okay, moving right along, we are going to move on to Kevin Burt, who has the charge of telling us all the excellent things that happened at the state legislature this year.
Okay, thank you. My name is Kevin Burt. I'm with the Department of Workforce Services. I support our Eligibility Service Division, our Unemployment Insurance Division, our Appeals Division, and then I also oversee the Legislative Affairs Department. I work close to Greg, and Greg told me on the way out yesterday, do not wear suits. Joke's on him because I'm actually kind of cold. Sweating over there. So. But I am grateful for the opportunity to come. I get invited once a year to come to the committee. I don't know how to get on the list to get invited all the time. I'm only once a year. But... But I'm happy to do this. I'm going to, last year I did kind of a green light, yellow light, red light, and talk about But because we record this, I cannot share my public opinion about bills, so I have changed the format.
Oh, right. We like chat. Okay.
I'll be happy to do it. So here I go again on my own. Greg reminded me last year I did Carly Rae Jepsen, so I thought twice me.
He looks like you make a lot of work for him.
He's
what was that, Greg?
So let's jump into Refugee Service Office. For those unfamiliar with the Department of Workforce Services, we are a department with 13 divisions. And so you have a lot of engagement with the Workforce Development Division and State Office of Rehabilitation based on the staff that are here. So I actually picked some divisions that maybe you aren't visiting. And so the Refugee Service Office is a centralized division that offers resettlement services to individuals who are designated as refugees. And this bill, it was a committee bill, an interim committee bill, to codify the Refugee Service Office. So years ago, the Department of Workforce Services had many services were spread across the department to help refugees, kind of intermingled with all the other divisions, and then we centralized it into a single office called the Refugee Service Office. It offers employment services, resettlement services, it has financial assistance, cash assistance to the refugees of Utah. We currently have about 26,000 refugees in the state of Utah, and this was a bill to codify it. It did get a little bit tricky during the legislative session. There was a lot of discussion about immigration, and immigration and refugees is very different. Refugees go through a very, very lengthy process to arrive here and are here legally. In fact, less than 1%, I think it's less than 0.1% that actually apply for the status actually obtained that status. And so in the end, we kind of had to navigate that, help explain the difference between the two because of the current climate when it comes to immigration. But luckily, we were able to codify the office. It's a great celebration because it is an incredible office under the Department of Workforce Services. The next one I did was child care. So the department also does child care subsidies for people who are income eligible. We help offset some of the expenses of child care. We also try to help connect individuals who are seeking child care to quality child care. So we actually have a quality system. The child care providers can interact with us and help us and help improve their quality rating, get referrals and such. And so I think there is agreement that child care availability is an issue and child care cost is an issue. I highlighted three bills that were introduced, and one of them was a $9 million appropriation to call child care modifications. And what it did is it allowed individuals who were working in the child care industry to qualify for child care subsidy regardless of income eligibility. And so what that was attempting to do is give a competitive advantage to people who are trying to hire child care workers that have lower wages, but you could help supplement that with a great benefit of a child care subsidy to help offset without ever losing that revenue. Another one was a child care business tax credit, which would offer business tax credits to companies that offer on-site child care as a business. Another one was child care service amendments, was related to the department and to the state, and what as the department has kind of shrunk in size, expanded to rural hiring, possibly offered more telework, some vacated state space has accrued, and what this would do is it would pay money to redesign that vacated space to be child care eligible. The state would still be responsible for basically the cost of the land and the building, and then that child care facility would be able to offer a significantly less cost because they didn't have to pay for the building costs or those operating costs. I see a lot of people taking pictures. Unfortunately, if you go to the next slide, none of these bills passed. So none of these bills passed. And I think it's because there is agreement on an issue, which is a great step legislatively, but there is certainly not agreement on how to resolve it. And so I think in some of these instances, the concerns expressed, certainly in committee meetings were, are we going to further increase costs by injecting state into the private industry? And so I think childcare will continue to be a discussion, continue to be addressed. These three bills in particular did not pass last legislative session. It focused more on deregulation and trying to simplify it. But I think there is some hesitancy to inject state dollars into unemployment insurance. So again, the department is responsible for unemployment insurance. Both we work with the employers to do the contributions and manage the trust fund, but we also help individuals who are laid off and come home with their own unemployment insurance to receive that unemployment benefit. These two bills are related to it was an employer that was pushing to expand the use of independent contractors through applications, through apps. And so one of them is a nurse field where there's an app now that some certified nurses basically register with the app. The hospital will reach out, say, hey, we're short nurses, and then it'll connect a nurse to kind of feel kind of like a substitute teacher sort of, but with nurses. And similarly with childcare providers. And so both of these are trying to navigate employers that are covered or employees that are covered by unemployment insurance, or are they truly independent contractors? And so DWS is responsible to evaluate whether an individual is an independent contractor according to unemployment insurance law. And sometimes the way around that is some people will try to seek codification of exemptions of government. The first one was kind of like a blanket, hey, if you're in this kind of app, you're assumed to be an independent contractor. We certainly don't prefer that method. We think, unfortunately, it misclassifies individuals, because if you classify an individual who's truly an employee as an independent contractor, they're not eligible for unemployment insurance, they are not eligible for workers' compensation, and so that misclassification really matters. So blanket, hey, everyone's an independent contractor, not the correct approach. The next one, I think, does a better job, where it really kind of looks at exercise of control and exercise of direction and kind of really, truly evaluate their independent contractor. But that is kind of a move, certainly, on the employment is offering through applications or through apps. And that is kind of a tricky spot because we make sure that individuals who are truly employees still get a classification of employees so they don't have these benefits. And then also, if they're misclassified, give a competitive advantage to them because they don't have to offer insurance, they don't have to offer pay unemployment, they don't have to pay workers' comp as a business. That one is certainly not defined. You'll hear a lot about Uber as an example of are they truly independent contractors or employees. But this, as a state, we have not finalized it. Here's two bills that did pass. The Department of Workforce Services is also over homeless services. And so I did want to kind of talk about that. There was a bill, House Bill 329, that really kind of focused the direction of safety of the shelters. And so this bill mandates that there are bag checks. There's a zero tolerance for certain substances. There is access to public safety to come in, and if there's concerns about safety or if there's a suspected individual that is trying to escape law enforcement to be able to go into the shelters. And so we think that this is a great bill. One of the things that we do, we monitor over 90 bills in the Department of Workforce Services because they connect in some way to EWS. One of the things we saw with this bill is unintentionally, we think a domestic violence shelter is also considered a shelter. And so when you write shelter law, that also applies to domestic violence shelters. And we were very nervous about the same security protocols for domestic violence shelters that are applied to homeless shelters. And so HB 505 actually exempts domestic violence shelters. And so that's kind of what we're doing as well, is making sure there's not unintended consequences for well-intentioned policy that has negative consequences somewhere else. And so it was great to have our team kind of navigate that and make sure those domestic violence shelters don't have to go through additional traumatic experiences because of a law that wasn't unintentionally impacted them. Also, you can see homeless funding. One of them is a winter shelter, so we do a winter response. Once it gets cold enough, we're asked to expand homeless shelter options. And so you can see a lot of this is kind of one-time funding. So there is agreement that homelessness is an issue. There's, again, there's not full agreement on how to resolve it. So one-time is kind of a nod that we don't have the revenue that we're looking for, but also not a full agreement about how to solve it. And so we are grateful that we're able to get some, as well as some funding for a family shelter. We were able to get some funding for a hospice for individuals who are homeless so they don't have to, unfortunately, die of their illness on the street. They can get the care that they need in a hospice-type environment, so we're grateful for that. And there was funding for an ombudsman, a homeless ombudsman. So we will be working to kind of fill that role, to be able to take complaints, educate, make sure to train the homeless shelters to make sure that they are treating people respectfully to them and the law in those shelters. A property loss fund was a bill that was passed that basically created a fund if you reside within a certain limited radius of a shelter. Sometimes you'll experience property damage and graffiti and cleaning, and so this is a fund to try and help offset that. It's a very small fund. We're only able to get $10,000 to be able to do that. That will go very, very quickly. But I think you can, sometimes with law, you have to kind of introduce it, prove the concept, and then kind of expand it. So we'll see what happens. And then housing affordability. So the Department of Workforce Services also has our housing community development division. So we try to address the affordability of housing or affordable housing. Certainly, affordable housing is much broader than the Department of Workforce Services, and there is full agreement that housing costs are a problem in the state of Utah. We have what's called the Commission on Housing Affordability. It's sponsored by, or it's chaired by a senator and a representative in the Department of Workforce Services Supports. Do you have much on saying Department of Workforce Services? I'm not using that.
You don't know that fast. You have to be the one that, like, slides
on. I think it's proven to be a good model. They meet during the interim, and there's broad representation on the Commission on Housing Affordability. So if that is something that you're really interested in, that's what I would recommend participating in, is Commission on Housing Affordability. This year, they did not focus those core bills in the past. There's a lot that goes into them, but it is deregulation. It is attempting to deregulate as much or standardize as much as possible to help developers not have to apply all these different rules across the objectives. And so I think that that is the attempt, and that is one of the beliefs of, hey, we've complicated this too much to be able to do our own, that even do need to go. There was some housing funding granted or appropriated by executive appropriations. You can see those funding allotments and programs. Those are existing programs. So they're not new programs, it's just expanded dollars to existing programs. And so we're certainly get that one prepared. Another one that DWS does is food assistance. So DWS determines eligibility for the SNAP program, or what was called food stamps, or HB 403 is a bill that requires the department to apply for a waiver to restrict SNAP from being able to be used to buy soda. And so, happy to do that. That's never been approved before. SNAP is a income and asset based program. It's a 100% federally funded benefit itself. It's 100% federally funded. So a waiver is a request to not follow federal regulation. Waive that. And so because it is a fully federally funded program, we have to ask permission to do that. And we're not going to be the only state to do that. But we're going to certainly be one of the first ones. So we will look there. One of the programs that we did seek funding for as a department was called Summer EBT, or Sunbucks. It's now called Sunbucks. That is a federal program as well. What that does is individuals or children who are eligible for free and reduced lunch at school, when the school ends and they're in its summertime, what Sunbucks does is it offers a food benefit to those eligible children during the summer months. and it comes on an EBT card or electronic benefit transfer card, like SNAP or like the food stamp program, and is restricted to food purchases. It costs the state $600,000 in general fund and state revenue to draw down $31 million in federal funds to be able to go to 260,000 eligible children. Unfortunately, that was not funded. We did get it last legislative session for this summer. So we will issue some bucks to the 260,000 eligible children this summer. And hopefully we will see if we pursue the funds again this next legislative session, the 2026 legislative session, to try and do this. I think there is some hesitancy to become more dependent on federal funds for federal programs with the bond being surveyed. And that was kind of a lot of discussion. It is unfortunate. It's a great program. It has significant impact for very little investment at the state. So we'll see if we can and then one click, please. There was one more bill I wanted to go over. It's House Bill 711, and it is the underrated food. So this is a bill that would designate the Utah underrated food. Okay? And so some of the discussions were, don't go too fast. Yep. Underrated and underrepresented. It's really good.
I actually do.
Okay.
So good.
The next one that was also discussed is chicken pot pie. And then the other one was blueberry muffins. I think blueberry muffins are pretty underappreciated. Like when you get a blue, like a muffin buffet, everyone's going chocolate. But man, blueberry muffins are pretty good. So unfortunately, don't take pictures. This bill did not pass. Did not have designated underrated food.
I love this report. I still want to do this also sarcastic. I love this.
This is why I was invited once a year. And then the last slide is my contact information. Happy to answer any questions about these
things. Why have you done this? I've got what's in there.
We'll
take one slide out. Cindy and her network, they'll be like,
What? I just admitted there were 711 bills.
Will you please include that last one?
I make it up.
Okay, awesome. Everybody get their phones out. It's going to be just Tari on the next agenda item. You're going to need to talk. And as you can see, you're all assigned to the next agenda item. But I kind of need somebody to kick it off. Sarah, are you the right person to pick it off? Who's the right person to kick this off? We're going to talk about employer survey.
He's coming over. Come on right now.
Is he? He's coming. Zach. Oh, Zach.
He took the back way.
There he is. Are you talking about the conference?
No.
He's in a minute. So, somebody's going to type in if I say something wrong. So if you recall, especially for those of you on the industry side, for unemployment insurance, they send out periodic surveys, employer surveys. Now, from what I have experienced, that typically goes to the person that fills out your unemployment insurance stuff for the state.
that doesn't necessarily mean it's human resources that does that. Or some, it's usually payroll or accounting. So what we'd like you to do first is scan this and then take the survey, and then I want to talk about a couple of things that we need to hold on.
Is that okay? May I? Well, yes. Just for the new members, because we have a lot of new members, we do surveys for both our job seekers, for our open centers, about how things are going, so we can incorporate feedback, and we also do surveys for employers on our employer services, so that we can incorporate that feedback. And so this is the employer survey, and I think we wanted this group to be able to take that survey, and then also I think we just talked about inviting you to extend this survey to your network, so at least I think we said five.
Yes, because the reason why I'm bringing that up is if you can, if like Linda's saying, if this survey is for services from Department of Workforce Services and things that an employer has engaged with, nothing against my accountants and my payroll people, but they're not typically the ones interacting with the Department of Workforce Services. And so they're either not filling out the survey because they can't answer the questions, or they're probably not giving the feedback back to the department that the department needs to improve. And so let's take the survey and then just talk. There's a couple of other things I want to highlight.
Just as a reminder, I oversee the unemployment insurance division for my work.
Hey, Kevin, while everybody's throwing it out, what's your email address?
I'm about
to clog your inbox with a bunch of beans.
I know, sorry guys, I should have had like background music for this.
I know what Kirk should play his favorite playlist.
Alright, so hopefully most everybody's seeing it. But you can, so, and maybe I'm being critical, but if I'm my CFO, because I've had this happen. And I'm sitting in my office and that survey pops up. I'm either going to delete it, or if I click on it, I know he's not going to be able to answer those questions. Is that fair to say?
Yep.
So, two things that I would like to have happen. We're going to send this out and ask that you pen pal it out, with some kind of curse at the bottom if they don't send it to five people. But at least send it to at least at a minimum five people in your network and just say, will you please take the opportunity to fill this out? And then, of course, ask them to also forward it on, but at least ask them. The second thing that I would ask is that, and maybe communicate this also in your email when you send it out to your network, that whoever is getting that email in your company, ask them to forward it to the person that can answer it best. This is the best way for the department to understand where the gaps are and what they need to do. And so we want to make sure we're getting that feedback as best as we can. So would you like to add anything?
No, and also we do appreciate the feedback. It will make a difference. So review the feedback and appreciate the feedback and people who are
okay. Feedback. There wasn't a section for medical.
On the
very first question. What kind of company? What kind of business are you in? There was no medical.
Oh.
I don't like being other, considering that every one of y'all go to a provider at some point.
Yeah.
That's good feedback, actually. Yeah, I think that's great feedback. Just the origins of this survey.
Bear Mountain Healthcare is one of the largest providers. University of Utah Healthcare System is one of the second largest providers, and we're not even on the first part of the list.
Yeah, so just remember, this board and the operations committee are the ones that came up with the survey. We are totally happy that that's guided through that group, and we will get that on the agenda for the next
meeting for operations.
You asked for it. I gave it to you.
Yeah. No, that's okay.
Everyone I get goes to medical.
I didn't even know. I'm on medical. I did too. Should have to provide some of us. I didn't know. So that was great. So, and as we send the survey back out, we're kind of short on time, but if you have additional feedback, please take it to operations committee so we can get up. Absolutely. Okay. Zach, you're up. If you look at your packet, we have this. Hold on. You want the glossy one? This one. This is the one. Zach's going to reference it. Go for it.
Good afternoon. My name is Zach Schlobaugh. I'm with Utah Department of Social Services. I am located in the best area of the state, Eastern Utah. If you're not there, let me know. I can get down there. A couple of highlights on here. I just want to point out. We hear a lot about job fairs. A lot of times we think of the large job fair, multi-employers, but we can also provide support directly to a company. There's a couple of examples in here on the very first page. East End, one specific company, so we did a job fair for their affected employees. The second page is also another one called Fruit of Lack, so another one that is done well with that. There's a lot of information on here. I'm not going to take more of your time. Please look at it. Feel free to hit me up if you have any questions. One of the events that we were not able to get in the newsletters kind of this week, but I was hoping I'd put Google on the spot, even free shout-out for your April 8th event with the Wilbur Doctor.
Yeah, so the Business Relations Team, the Utah Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities and Partnership with Disability in Utah hosted our biannual Workability Career Preparation and Job Fair. Our events are every April and every October. It is targeted to individuals with disabilities, but it's open to everyone. The main thing is that it is our People with Disability Network business partners, so businesses who have met with us, have partnered with us, understand how to recruit, hire, and retain individuals with disabilities and have that as a part of their future who are attending the event. We make sure to have accommodations for the individuals with disabilities, so ASL interpreters, mobility, we have spaces where individuals can come in and have get workshops, how to utilize a job fair, how to dress for success, working in government professions, and social security benefits and work, because that can be a question for individuals with disabilities. We had about 250 individuals attend, and I want to say 25 employers. I will say right now it's a difficult time to get employers to come to the table, so we were proud of getting that number to the event.
Awesome. Nice job. Kudos to you guys with that. And then the last thing I'll just highlight is very last page is our upcoming events. It's also our local area or region's contact information. So if you want to connect with Leah and her team, if you want to connect with any of the other individuals in the region of the state, economists in the area, please utilize that resource on that page. All right, Megan, that was your list. All yours.
So good. Excellent. Okay, we're going to do quick report outs from committee. Just by way of information, we're having changes in career pathway, so we won't do an update on them today. Operations kind of had their time in the sun with the employer survey and the recertification, so I'm going to skip them today. And Gary left, so he had a meeting. He'll pop back in just a minute. And then also, Matt Liu and his chair, Jordan,
I'm here.
Do you feel like you can do a youth update?
Yes. Yep. I can be really quick. Thanks, Megan.
Just a couple minutes. That's great. Or less. I'm here.
Perfect. So excited to be on the youth committee. Matt Liu was unable to attend, so I'll fill in some gaps here. So a couple things we're working on and have talked about is apprenticeships. I know they're moving forward in southern Utah. We want to try to communicate with other parts of the state on apprenticeships. A big win, first Kane County High School Career Fair. That was held on April 8th. excited about that. I know different communities have job fairs. We definitely feel like those are really important so that our youth can find, look at different industries, communicate with different businesses. So we're excited for Kane County there. During our next meeting, we're going to discuss different education activities and how to get these career fairs in smaller high schools. And so we'll be working on that. And then the last thing would be the virtual reality, having career exploration through VR, which is kind of cool. So I think you might have the opportunity to look at that at the end of the meeting today. So that's what we have. We're excited to get our youth involved in moving forward with development. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for pinching really quickly. You did great. Okay, next we're going to do serving individuals with disabilities. I'm going to let Stephen give us our update on that.
All right. You want a brief, so we'll try to
be concise. Oh, but for this one, all these things in your packet, that's, you're going to want to look at those while he talks.
First thing I want to point out is there's several things in the packet of upcoming events. Leah updated on the job fair that we just had yesterday and another one here in another 6 months. Great opportunities for interaction and opportunity for individuals. In addition to that, we've got the Autism and Newer Diversity Awareness Month, which takes place in April. We've got a virtual event in May. We've got the Mental Health Month. And again, we've got an event there on May 8th. It's also virtual. Very importantly, we've got our 51st annual Golden Keywords Awards of the Disability and Utah Summit, which happens in September. Very excited about this. We've got nominations open until tomorrow, but Leah, you'll push that to next week if we need to.
If you would like to make a nomination and reach out to me and let me know, I will make sure that we get it in.
Thank you. All right. And so, you know, great opportunity to honor those companies that really provide great service and interests and opportunities for individuals with disabilities who really enter the job force and provide contributions. So tremendous event. Along with that, at the Golden Keys, we have scholarships to provide to individuals with disabilities. So again, for individuals who think are worthy of that, you know, we'd love to. And again, we have several $1,000 scholarships that we give away at that event. So again, a very good opportunity there. In addition to that, a month plus ago, we had an employer workshop. We've got another one in September. This most recent one was out at the Center for the Blind. Very fascinating to go into a wood shop and see people that are blind playing with bandsaws and lathes that don't have any special accommodations on them. Scary beyond all reason from a staff standpoint as I looked at it, because I know I've come close to hurting myself and I can see. And so, but fascinating, the opportunities there, and just a great chance to really educate employers on how individuals with disabilities can contribute and how valuable they are to organizations, what the opportunities are. So great opportunity there. I indicate that we had our Black Mentoring event that we hold currently once a year in February. Just a great chance to help individuals that have disabilities as they're pursuing jobs that just want to talk to somebody. Most of these are set up virtually. We ask, you know, individuals to just spend an hour of their time. That's all it really is. You know, this time around, I was very fortunate to visit with a young lady that actually has her undergraduate degree from Utah State Statistics, bright as can be, but again, she was a little challenged. But I had a great opportunity to visit with her. As we finished up, you know, I made the offer, this isn't expected, but I made the offer of, hey, you want to follow up? And boy, she did immediately. She had some questions that we worked on later of, how do you, you know, what's the best way to put a cover letter together? And then I need help in answering specific questions as I'm in interviews because I struggle with that. She's got that struggle personally. It's very difficult for her. And so, you know, I put together some things for And I sent them to her, and I said, look, you know, make sure you talk to the counselor, because I don't want to blow it on this. You know, I'm not the expert here. But, you know, just a great opportunity to help someone. And so we've got tremendous things going on all the time with the committee. We meet every other month. I would invite any and all of you to attend our meetings. The next one is on the 14th of May. And we'll even buy lunch for you. Buy me the cheap meal.
He's totally recruiting for this meeting. There's only one to do that.
So, thank you.
Awesome, thank you.
Michael,
for
apprenticeship?
Yes, really short and sweet. Apprenticeship day, April 30th. It is being hosted at the Salt Lake Community College on the Miller campus from 10 to 2. That's going to start out with the HTAP webinar from 10 to 11:30. We're expecting about 200 to attend for that apprenticeship day for the job fair.
Here's a flag.
I do have numbers now for some of these apprenticeships, so the teacher apprenticeship that we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
So there's 14 that were hired, two that have started right now, and then within about a week and a half, the rest should be on board going with that. A couple other apprenticeships that have kind of started on Talent Ready. It's been working with Snow College for manufacturing track and composite apprenticeship. There's also one for that they're putting together for hospitality and tourism. And then first time in rural Utah, six potential students for the ACT Aerospace Apprenticeship. Awesome. So a lot of apprenticeship opportunities.
Gunnison?
The aerospace.
Gunnison?
Aerospace is with Apogee.
Yeah.
Apogee works is up in the Davis County.
Awesome. So much going on with apprenticeships. Thank you. I know that was quick, but I appreciate it. I wanted to give time to Transfer VR to give us a presentation. And then how many have had an Oculus on their head? How many feel like they're good at an Oculus? Because I'm a little bit fussy. It's not great. But I'm very excited to see this new training option for kids. I think it's going to be amazing. So who's
the one here?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay.
Nice to see everybody. I
was being rude.
I'm
your clicker.
Nice to meet everybody. My name is Clint Kelson. I am the regional vice president for customer success for Transfer, so I oversee our Western states. I live in northern Utah. I live in Oregon. I was born and raised in Riverdale, Utah. We're with Transfer. We're headquartered out of New York City, but we are in 48 different states throughout the country. Lindsay, did you say anything?
I am a clicker.
You do? So I like this, and she's done. All right, cool. Yeah, we can go to the next slide and jump into it. So for those of you that aren't familiar with us, we are a company that started not too long ago, about 2017-18. Really didn't take off until post-COVID, for a variety of reasons, you can imagine. Our CEO, Barani Rajakumar, shares very openly our mission, right? And it is to help every student, trade person, and job seeker develop in-demand skills, secure long-term employment, and enjoy upward mobility. So what Transfer does with that is we have created a process, and if you want to go to the next slide, to work with communities throughout the entire country. And as you can see, a lot of popular use cases, we work with employers, we work with secondary education, post-secondary, workforce development boards, government, and nonprofits throughout the entire country. Some of them are used for career courses, CTE programs, you know, you go through the list here, a variety of different use cases for why people would use these headsets. What I just wanted to briefly share today is the impact they can have and the opportunity to use them here in the state of Utah. So let's go to the next slide. Statistics show there are a lot of job opportunities, but there's not as many students. 40% of 2024 high school graduates are not college bound. they're not looking to, you know, further their education. And what transfer does is it helps create, one, excitement, but it also creates opportunity for people to be exposed to careers. How many, by raise of hand, have known somebody that maybe went into the same job somebody in their family has gone into? Our CEO talked about that. You usually don't become what you haven't seen. You usually will follow the footsteps of other people. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but in some cases, a lot of people don't know what opportunities are out there, what kind of jobs they can become. Something that I'm very curious about, I always, what do they do? I will strike up conversations with all sorts of people. Just like, oh, I don't know your job is. What do you do? Like, I might know the title, but I don't know what the day in and day out of it is, right? If you go to the next slide, this really showcases, you got to click a little bit there. I apologize to get those other titles to come up. But we create a classroom to career pathway. So the first portion of what we offer at Transfer is these first two boxes, discover careers and experience a career. That's what's called our Transfer Trek. Students can use a mobile app to be able to answer questions that help them to then say, based upon the skills that either you have an interest in or you believe you are good at, here are some careers that you may want to explore. And it will provide them with a list of careers, what is the pay in the local area here in Utah, as well as nationally, what do you have to do to be able to get into that career, and then explore the feedback from people in that career. What do they find challenging? What do they find rewarding? So it helps them to understand all these different careers. There's over 100 different careers they can explore. From that, they get to get into the transfer headsets and experience something like that. Now, we don't yet have over the 100 different careers, but we do currently have 42 different career simulations that are 5 to 8 minutes long that will encourage some of you, if you're brave enough and open to it, to try them out today to experience what is that job like. And sometimes when it doesn't have a career for it, it'll link them to a career that has the same type of skill set, right, to say, is this something you're interested in? Some of them can range from being a CNA and a phlebotomist dealing with blood. Some of them might be in the operating room. Some of them might be a manufacturer or a constructor working in welding, drilling, working with heavy machinery. Others can be business or finances. So it's a wide variety of different careers they can explore. And then we have this other side of it that is called the virtual training facility. These are very in-depth simulations that people can go into to actually get very real hands-on experience in the job. For example, one that I've done, I'm very proud of, and I'm going to share, even though it's silly, is changing the oil in a car. Anybody changed oil in a car before here? I have not previously. I did the simulation, and then I attempted it afterwards, and I was successful. I'm not going to lie. I tried it on my car.
My kid did it. He drained my transmission fluid.
Nope. Did he watch the VR training?
No, I'll get that.
Yeah, so they are very real experiences. Very short story. I'm actually working with, I grew up in Weaver School District and working with Ron Belknap, and we're trying to work with them and getting them into their entire middle schools up there. I went to school there. My daughters go to school there, so I'm working with them. It's really exciting. He actually tried the simulation of doing the headset with the oil. He took it off mid-course, and he's like, holy cow, this is so realistic. He asked me to take the O-ring off, and he's like, I have to tell you the story. Before I was married to my wife, I changed her oil. Long story short, 2 weeks later, the oil came out of it and her car seized and it like the engine exploded. He's like, I couldn't believe what happened. Went back, tracked down the car and had been towed to a car lot, found out he didn't take the O-ring off of it. So when he put in the new filter, the oil still. So it's so funny because he's like, it was so detailed. And it really is. There's a lot of great, we work with experts in the field to create these. And so it's an awesome opportunity for people to get a real hands-on experience. If you want to go to the next slide for me, as I wrap this up, this is just introducing Transfer Trek. So again, they get to do the mobile component of it. They get to experience the VR aspect of it. And then there's these curriculum sources as well as the app where they can then set goals, right? So even here with Workforce Services, as they have, and we work with Workforce Service departments throughout the entire country. I've worked with Nevada. I've worked with Texas. Their entire state have this at a lot of their workforce boards across the state, as well as in New Mexico and in Colorado. And the awesome thing about that is as they come into the facilities, they can go through this experience and then create goals. They have something they're tracking. They're going to go follow up with people in the field to understand more about and shadow somebody. Or they're going to go research the job and find out what they need to do to get a certificate or to get more training. And then they can come back and continue those simulations to even get more hands-on experience. If you go to the next slide for me, I'm going to skip through these to be quick, so I'm short on time. But that shows you very briefly where you can see dental assistant, web developer, shows you the pay level, and then you can click into this and they'll go further into detail. So it's a great resource for people to explore. If you go to the next one, again, it's the VR experience, so you can really actually sense what that job is like and get a feel for it. If you go to the next slide, that's where you can kind of wrap up those goals that I was just talking about and be able to hold people accountable. It comes with a PDF. They can track it. They can have conversations with their loved ones, or they can come back with their counselors or those that they're working with. You go to the next slide. I already spoke to these are some of the career simulations we have today that you can try. So if you see anything interesting in here, would encourage you to try it out. Cybersecurity analyst, electrical engineer. If you like to work on a knee surgery, that one's fairly popular, but there is some blood, so be mindful. The broadband one where you're climbing a tower, you're afraid of heights, it's fun to get exposed to some of those things. But just as much as you find out what you're interested in, you can maybe find out what you're not so interested in.
Blood
so,
and heights.
Certainly it's kind of a neat experience. If you go to the next slide, our career training, this is what I was talking about. These are in-depth trainings that can last from 10 to upwards of 50 minutes long in the headset. And they are in automotive, construction, healthcare, aviation, diesel tech, manufacturing, electrical, and hospitality, and tourism, over 330 simulations that give people even the basics of wearing the right equipment, how to prepare for some of the roles that they're going to be having. It includes math and measurements, so it's also a great way to teach people. People use these in K-12 schools to help facilitate some of the teachings. One of the coolest things that I like to share with people, too, if you haven't experienced VR, and I encourage you to today if you can, it genuinely is such an engaging and helpful way to remember what you've learned. I don't know Stephen Nelson, but I'll call him because I was listening to him briefly sharing about people with disabilities or people that have different challenges. We've seen this work wonders with people in those situations as well because it is open to them as well. It gives them opportunities to train in these different environments and find things that work well for them. And so anyways, it's phenomenal. It's a great way to learn, and the retention and the engagement is beyond any type of other education forms statistics have shown of that work. If you go to the next slide, I think I'm wrapping up. But just wanted to share how we support Utah Workforce Services. You know, obviously we're here to provide support. I mentioned myself, I'm here in Utah. Evan is our customer success manager that works on my team. He is dedicated to working with Lindsay and her team to ensure that they are being kept up to speed on all the new simulations, also getting feedback from those that are using them of what careers they'd like to see next. As I mentioned, we've already released 12 different career simulations since the start of this year. We're constantly building new ones and helping to deliver those to our customers. And then also Charlie Bradley, he's in Layton, Utah. He works as our government relations director and has worked with the team previously. But just to highlight again, a couple of the things that we do is we provide that career awareness and career exploration through those two different avenues in the headsets, as well as the out-of-headset experience through using the app, by using the curriculum resources. And then again, we do have a dashboard. I won't go into the details of that, but that's where we get to track all of our data, right? How many people have actually taken these simulations? Have they happened for the career exploration? You can rank if you liked it or not. When you get into the actual headset and you're doing the trainings, you have to pass it. So the coach will walk you through it, for example, changing oil. Then they leave it to you to do it after. And so you have to walk through and demonstrate that you can actually do the entire process. And that's where you can actually track somebody's success and how they're passing or working with those. But again, we do look forward to continuing to work with the state of Utah and those that are using it. Had a great opportunity to meet some when I was at a conference last week at UVU. Was down in Southern Utah and ran across some people that are also leveraging that. And I know they're dispersed throughout the state. So really excited about supporting that. I don't know, Lindsay, I'll turn it over to you if you have anything else.
Yeah, I just want to add, thank you so much, Clint. We're so excited to partner with Transfer. Offer this resource across the state. These headsets are available
all across the state and any of the women's centers. If you would like to access them, you can contact a local representative. We are starting off with really focusing on our youth and how we can offer these career aspirations to youth, so age 14 to 24, how we can connect them to different careers they weren't aware of, like talking about. We're really, really excited to just keep exploring and expanding these opportunities with them, working with Scott Romney and his apprenticeship team, see how we can implement this into apprenticeship training as well. So.
Awesome. And one last thing too, just to share, they are in English and in Spanish. They do have closed captioning as well. As I mentioned, you can do it standing. Some people always say, I encourage you to try it. You can do it sitting down. You can do it from a stationary position, so you don't have to stand. And it's not like if you've done the ones where it's a roller coaster. None of them are that thrilling, unfortunately. They are fun and engaging, but they're not going to throw you through a loop or anything like that as well. So, and afterwards, you have time. We do have some set there. I'd be happy to walk through and use them if you'd like to.
Okay, this is so cool. I'm like, oh my gosh, what do you do this? How do I use it in my company? What can I do? I have so many ideas. This is so cool. But I want everybody to get an opportunity to put their hands on and try a 3 or 5 minute upskill thing sometime. So ask your questions back there. I'm not going to ask you that question. Really quick before, I just want to mention our July meeting. I always mention it because summer vacations are coming up. But if you can do, we are going to move to Metro. If you guys remember a couple board meetings ago, it's our field trip time. July is when we go on our field trips. Metro is a very different experience, and I just feel like everyone here needs to experience that. So for those of you online, for those of you here, just make note of the location change in July. We will be at the downtown Metro office, and we'll do a little bit touring and jaw chatting a little bit towards the end of that meeting as well. Extremely impactful, and the staff there is just incredible. So we'll be doing that. With that, do we have anybody online or here for public comment? Okay, with that, we will adjourn until July. Go put on headsets.